Today on Annenberg Radio News.
Possibly citizenship or even just this deferred action might be taken away.
In our final installation of the Graduation Day LA series, we look at a Dream Act student whose status in this country is uncertain. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, May 2nd, 2013. I'm Omar Shamoot. More ethics charges are surfacing in the Los Angeles mayor's race. Today, the publisher of Los Cerritos Community News held a press conference on the steps of City Hall to talk about an ethics complaint the newspaper is filing against LA City Controller and mayoral candidate Wendy Gruhl. Reporter Lauren Jones has more.
The complaint against mayoral candidate Wendy Gruhl alleges that instead of performing her duties as city controller, Gruhl has been using the time to fundraise, send emails and make phone calls using city property, and disclosing city information to her campaign staff to help her mayoral candidacy. The newspaper conducted a six-month investigation after receiving a tip that Gruhl had been abusing her position as city controller. The investigation began after...
We did a public records request in January.
That's Brian Hughes, the paper's publisher.
And she took 90 days to respond to that. Now, under Section 6253, they're supposed to respond in 24 days.
Hughes says that was the first red flag. After receiving the public records, the newspaper concluded...
Gruhl is using her office to campaign and gaining support for her campaign, and that's an ethics violation.
The complaint will be evaluated by the city's Ethics Commission. The commission will review over 130 pages of emails Gruhl sent to her mayoral campaign staff during business hours using computers owned by the city. Gruhl's office released a written statement to Annenberg Radio News saying Wendy Gruhl has never had a single ethics violation or paid a penny in fines. She's been open and transparent, even turning over emails to the Ethics Commission for review. Both Gruhl and her mayoral opponent, Eric Garcetti, have accused each other of misconduct on a range of issues. On May 21st, it will be up to the voters to decide whether these ethics charges have any bearing on who becomes the next mayor. Lauren Jones, Annenberg Radio News.
On May 21st, LA voters will go to the polls to choose a new mayor and vote for other city officials. As Cliff Liu reports, the city clerk is hoping for a bigger turnout than the March primary election.
In the mayoral primary election in March, only a fifth of the nearly 1.8 million registered voters turned out. The winner was decided by just over 10,000 votes. City Clerk June Legme says she hopes the May election will have a better turnout. What they're doing to get more votes is a campaign called LA City Votes that partners with organizations in LA's ethnic communities and the bilingual press.
We can't be everywhere at once, but they have access to community, and they can tell us the special needs of the communities and how we can help them.
Legme reminded voters if they can't turn up on election day, they can still vote by mail.
We're doing everything we can to get the word out, to make it easy and understandable to vote. And on election day, all assistance is offered.
Ballots are available now and can be mailed in up until election day. If you have any questions about where to vote, go to clerk.lacity.org and click on the elections link. Cliff Liu, Annenberg Radio News.
A red flag warning has been issued for Riverside following a large wildfire that's burned over 3,000 acres. Officials are warning California residents to prepare for an early fire season. Reporter Katie Lyons spoke with fire experts about what people should expect this season.
The typical fire season is still 2 months away, but firefighters are already battling large fires across California. Riverside's Summit Fire kicked off the fire season in Southern California yesterday, burning down one house and leaving two firefighters injured. Today, additional fires are blazing through Camarillo, Thousand Oaks, and Ventura, forcing evacuations for residents and students at Cal State Channel Islands. Roger Lamoni is with the National Weather Service.
Normally in the summer, Southern California is dry, so our chances of precipitation that would really make a difference in the wildland vegetation is very, very low, so that can't be counted on. And so the latest fire potential outlook from the Bureau of Land Management for the western states is basically above average.
Winds, a dry winter, and warm conditions are brewing up the perfect storm. Glenn Barley of CAL FIRE says this could be a dangerous fire season.
The conditions are primed out there for perhaps larger fires or more fires. Again, we just have to kind of wait and see when we get starts and where they're at and how quickly we can get on them. Obviously, our goal is to get them on, hit them hard early, and keep them small.
Barley and Lamoni recommend being cautious of anything that could start a fire and to remove brush and weeds from around homes and buildings. Katie Lyons, Annenberg Radio News.
Former CIA Director General David Petraeus will be joining the USC faculty this fall. Will Tober has the story.
General David Petraeus has over 37 years of experience in the military. He will serve as the Judge Windy Professor, a position that USC says is reserved for eminent individuals. One of his roles will be mentoring veterans and current ROTC students. USC sophomore and member of the Naval ROTC program, Daniel Luciani, says students are eager to learn from someone with so much knowledge.
We're all very, very excited and honored that we'll be able to hear him talk to us and get access to all of his knowledge that he has available to him.
Petraeus resigned as CIA director last year after confessing to an extramarital affair. Lee Reynolds, an associate professor of military science, doesn't think the general's personal life will affect his value as an educator.
I was sad and disappointed, but he's worked through that, and the general needs to be assessed or looked at based on his entire career, not just on that one small incident.
Petraeus will be involved in several other departments at USC, including the Price School of Public Policy, the School of Social Work, and the Annenberg School for Communication. Reynolds works within the Department of Public Policy. He's excited for the future leaders of America.
Just think of a man with that kind of experience, what he can teach future lawmakers and people getting involved in the public sector.
Petraeus has served a similar role at other universities in the past. He currently holds a faculty position for City University of New York. Will Tober, Annenberg Radio News.
The Obama administration is appealing a federal court's decision to lift age limits for the morning after pill, also known as Plan B. Emily Mathieu explains the impact this could have in South Los Angeles.
For Stephen Colbert, this story is just the butt of another joke.
I work for Viacom, and two of the company's biggest cash cows are Teen Mom and 16 and Pregnant. Plan B could obliterate these treasured franchises.
But the issue of age limits for the morning after pill has polarized groups across the country. The California State Board of Pharmacy requires people to be 17 years or older to buy the pill. In a community like South Los Angeles, the morning after pill could reduce the high teenage pregnancy rates. Dr. Daniel Michel is a professor at USC who has done extensive research on contraception and the morning after pill.
Drops the pregnancy rate after a single act of intercourse around the mid-cycle from 6% to 1.5%.
South LA has one of the highest teen pregnancy rates in the country. According to the L.A. County Public Health Department's latest estimates, there are about 59 births for every 1,000 teenage girls.
A lot of these young women, 15 to 17, they don't have driver's license and they don't have proof of age. All these barriers should be taken away.
Elizabeth Gay is a senior associate for the Reproductive Health Technologies Project and opposes President Obama's appeal.
Emergency contraception is safe. There are barely any side effects. It's safer than children's Tylenol.
Her organization is a national nonprofit that advises women and advocates for the accessibility to resources like the morning after pill. Sister Paula Vandegar is a social worker for International Life Services, which promotes Christian values and counsels pregnant women. Her organization is in favor of Obama's appeal.
This is very bad policy to allow very young teens to be covering up the sex, having sex without their parents or anyone knowing about it, and I think women are going to get further hurt in this kind of thing.
The Obama administration's decision to appeal the ruling was in line with the position he took during his re-election campaign. Despite opposition from a lot of his Democratic base, he says he doesn't believe that young teens should have unlimited access to emergency contraceptives. Emily Mathieu, Annenberg Radio News.
The Retail Justice Alliance held a hearing today in L.A. to highlight the problems that part-time workers in the retail industry face. Nicolette Collegian reports.
When I first started, I was part-time, but I always thought there was a chance that I could get full-time. but now it's been almost 34 years, and they don't want anyone full-time.
That's Jenny Heil. She's asked her employer, Vons, to make her full-time every year, but has now given up. She and other workers spoke at a hearing at the East LA College. They spoke in favor of legislation to ensure that part-time workers receive benefits.
I'm doing okay, but I'm 56 now, so, like, I guess I should think about retirement, but, you know, I don't have anything, and so it's hard to save up.
Heil is a member of the United Food and Commercial Union Local 1428. Connie Leva, the local's president, says about 70 to 80% of its members are part-time and not because they want to be.
They always claim that they need flexibility. They're worried about flexibility. We're worried about our members being able to feed their families.
Congresswoman Judy Chu attended the hearing. She said she supports the Part-Time Worker Bill of Rights Act that was introduced in Congress in February. Nicolette Collegian, Annenberg Radio News.
Well, it already feels like summer outside, and temperatures will hover around the mid-70s for most of the evening. The heat wave will continue tomorrow with a high of 90 degrees expected during the afternoon. But temperatures will drop into the mid-70s on Saturday with some light rain and a high of 67 expected on Sunday. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we take a look at how one restaurant is paying homage to its namesake place in gay rights history. The Senate's new immigration reform bill creates a path to citizenship for many of the 11.1 million undocumented immigrants living in the U.S. Many are young people, including students, who are anxious and unclear about their futures. California laws have additional protections for them. But in this last installment in the Graduation Day LA series, Jasmine Lopez introduces us to one high school senior who fears that his civic engagement is putting him in danger of being deported.
My name is Marco Perez. I am undocumented and unafraid.
Unafraid. It's taken Marco Perez a long time to openly say that he's undocumented. He grew up in Los Angeles, but always knew he was brought to the United States as a child without proper documentation. Marco has lived with many fears and the feelings of being an outsider. His biggest fear? Deportation to Mexico, a country he doesn't know. At his high school in Boyle Heights, Marco joined a club for students like him to help him realize he is not alone.
No human being is illegal, like immigration reform for everyone.
In my sophomore year, I joined the Dreamers Club. I had other students, other peers who were undocumented like me. Because it wasn't like everybody in my high school was like, oh, hey, I'm undocumented. No, they would keep it a secret.
After a year in the club, Marco grew tired of living in fear and wanted to be proud of who he was. At 17, he did something that more and more undocumented students are willing to do.
Last year, I participated in civil disobedience to protest against Lee Baca and his unlawful deportations. But most importantly, I did it for myself. I thought that I needed that motivation, that courage.
Marco believed his protest against the LA County Sheriff was one way to free himself from the fears and shame he carried throughout his life. But with this courage came uncertainty. Marco was one of five undocumented students arrested that day. As an undocumented youth brought to the U.S. before the age of 16, he qualified for deferred action. But his arrest threatened that.
It kind of made me just a little bit afraid that the one opportunity that has been given to me, possibly citizenship or even just this deferred action, might be taken away.
One afternoon, anxious to move forward with his deferred action application, Marco calls a lawyer in search of a clear answer. Was his record affected by the civil disobedience?
No, I just really thought that you were the lawyer representing me, but I guess I was wrong. Because I thought I had a case, where I had to go to court and everything. Where can I just find out about my case? Who can I ask?
The lawyer wasn't able to answer the question that has been eating away at Marco. Despite the uncertainty, he and his mother move forward with his deferred action application. During a car ride through Boyle Heights, his mother tells him all they can do at this point is wait to see if it's God's will to make it happen. Marco's mother always reminds him to stay out of trouble and be on alert because of his status. She's scared about the future. He's scared too.
If if I work hard here and get my PhD, my whatever it is, and somehow they somehow deport me, all my hard work would be for nothing.
Even something as simple as sneaking under a fence at a middle school field to play soccer has him on edge. The fear is always present.
And I would just end up in a country where I can't really speak the language. And I would just have to start all over again. It's a very scary situation.
Get your quiz out and work on your quiz, so that way when Joanna finishes, you can help her with the quiz.
During a geometry tutoring session at Marco's school, he and his friends discuss college application deadlines. As a peer counselor, he often checks in to make sure his friends aren't falling behind on opportunities to pursue their goal of attending university.
I got rejected from Harvard, so I don't want to go to San Diego. I don't know why I applied, but now I'm just scared.
So I'm looking forward to graduation, going to college. I want to cling to the hope that I have that I can become a citizen in the United States, because I just want to live like a normal life. You know, it's just stop being afraid, stop being embarrassed.
Marco is unsure of what he'll study in college, but he's certain it will involve computers. He's still waiting to hear back about his deferred action application status. Was he granted deferred action? Can he work and attend college without worrying about deportation for the next 2 years? Jasmine Lopez, Annenberg Radio News.
Daniel Hempel is an award-winning journalist who started covering the foster care system as a student reporter at USC. Hempel now teaches a class at USC's Saul Price School of Public Policy called Media for Social Change. I spoke with Hempel today about his journalistic philosophy. So you are an Annenberg grad, is that right?
That's correct.
When did you graduate?
2007.
So tell us a little bit about what you got up to after graduation.
First thing I did was went to the Daily Journal, where I covered entertainment law. But I had already started covering children's issues when I was here at Annenberg. And so I'd heard about this lacrosse team down in South LA at Manual Arts High School, which is just down the road from us here at Annenberg, and all black and Latino team. And I started coaching that team, volunteering as a coach, and one of my players turned out being in foster care. And so before I had left, I had already written a pretty long story that was edited by Miles Corwin, who was, and I believe still is, an investigative reporting teacher. I had pitched that piece to the LA Weekly, and it went to the LA Weekly, and that and other stories I wrote about the foster care system quickly started winning me awards. And so I started moving towards covering child welfare as soon as possible, even if my first job was supposedly covering the entertainment beat for the Daily Journal. I was already focused on kids.
Have you seen your reporting have tangible impacts in the foster care system?
Yes. I can pretty confidently say we've been a part of federal reform to the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, so allowing social workers access to foster student records, something that was never happened before. We've been focusing a lot of attention on that, and we were a part of seeing that happen. So I think, you know, that's just one little example, but we've done work around the country on this, just focusing attention on the education of foster youth. And that has resulted in hundreds of stories in other media outlets that are focused on solutions.
You've said your goal is to teach students solution-based journalism. What does that entail?
If you think about children, for example, right? All the literature around kids says that it's more effective parenting to talk about when they do something good as when they talk about doing something bad. And I feel like in the media, you know, we always say the media is part of the problem. Well, yeah, the media is a reflection of only the problems that we face in our society. And that's not even accurate. So when I talk about solution-based journalism, I say, well, look, let's talk about problems. We need to talk about problems. But we also need to offer thoroughly researched, deeply reported information about what potential solutions might exist, with also the acknowledgement to your reader or your viewer or everything else that this is not a solution that you are necessarily promulgating. It is just what you see and what could be the best. And so solution-based journalism is taking the problems and focusing on the answers.
If you'd like to see some of the work produced by Hempel students, come to the Media for Social Change Student Symposium tonight at 6 p.m. in the Ralph and Goldie Lewis Hall Auditorium. Little Tokyo is full of noodle shops, but what makes a noodle stand out from the rest? Foodie reporter Tanaya Ghosh searches for a knockout Japanese noodle in her segment, Tanaya's Table.
Freshly made udon noodles used to be hard to find in Los Angeles. Luckily, there's Marugame Monzo, a new udon eatery located in downtown's Little Tokyo district. Monzo combines the authenticity of traditional handmade noodles with a fresh new take, perfect for LA's eclectic food scene. The noodles are rolled and cut by hand right in front of customers. It's a nice show if you're lucky enough to get a front row seat. In addition to simple hot and cold udon dishes, the menu offers creatively unique items sure to please adventurous foodies looking for a new thrill. The uni cream sauce udon bowl is a standout dish, well worth its $16 price tag. It bursts with crave-worthy umami flavor, and the noodles are perfectly chewy yet soft. The al dente noodle's subtle flavor complements the rich flavors of the sauces. Additions such as the tempura soft yolk jidori egg add another dimension to the dishes. Other highlights include the squid butter and spicy cod roe udon, as well as the fusion miso carbonara udon. The miso component is a little harder to detect, but there's plenty of bacon and rich, creamy, cheesy sauce for carbonara lovers. The udon at Monzo has received rave reviews from Japanese diners who know and love their handmade noodles. Heads up, make sure to go before 6 p.m. to avoid waiting in the line that snakes down the sidewalk. Thanks for listening to the final episode of Tanaya's Table on ARN. If you'd like to keep following my foodie adventures, you can follow me on Twitter at Tanaya G. Tanaya Ghosh, Annenberg Radio News.
The Stonewall Riots of 1969 helped spark the gay civil rights movement. But the infamous New York bar wasn't the first site of a major gay protest. As Melissa Kaplan tells us, a police raid at a Silver Lake gay bar 2 years before Stonewall helped set the stage for action.
5 minutes after patrons of the Black Cat celebrated the coming of 1967, plainclothes police officers began beating them to the floor. 16 were arrested, including 3 bartenders, and 6 men were charged and found guilty of lewd conduct. Gay and lesbian bars were often targets of police raids in the 60s, but amidst the tensions building from the civil rights movement, the New Year's raid was a step too far. For weeks after the event, activists protested, distributed leaflets, and founded what will become The Advocate, the first major gay publication, still in circulation. Decades later, the Black Cat is under new ownership and is open to the public as an eatery and lounge. The city of Los Angeles has made the bar an official historical and cultural landmark. And bar manager Joe Grogi says they must honor the space's heritage.
We have to keep the original sign. We have to keep the front facade the same. The bar has to stay in the same location. So all that is protected from change. A lot of people in the neighborhood are very protective of the history.
The venue is flanked by framed signs of protests on the wall and receives visitors paying homage to the riots. And that's where comparisons to the Black Cat of the 60s ends.
We're not technically a gay bar, but we're not a straight bar either. We welcome everybody.
A good anthem for the site of a civil rights landmark. Melissa Kaplan, Annenberg Radio News.
Now we check in with Eric Rubel to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
First, we'll have continued coverage of the fires burning throughout the Los Angeles region. Then we'll also have big news coming in from Rhode Island regarding gay marriage. Thanks, Omar.
Thank you, Eric. Well, that's it for this Thursday and for this semester. We'd like to thank our entire Thursday crew, Lauren Jones, Nicolette Collegian, Katie Lyons, Olivia Nyland, Amen Oyeboke Osifo, Claire Pyrese, Sarah Politis, and Fiona Wang. A big thank you to our technical magician, Sam Weiser and Joel Zink. Also a thank you to ATVN and to Sandy Tolan's radio documentary class for our Graduation Day LA series. Molly Gray is our producer. Our executive producer is Aaron Schrank. And for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Omar Shamoot.
Mm-hmm.